music that we've been listening to, are pieces that are among the favorite pieces of sacred music of my father's. And the one who helped him recording his meditations and playing music before and after and gathering together his favorite pieces was Mikhail Horowitz. There's a Sufi tradition which takes the form of the Kashkul. Kashkul is often a dried gourd. Sometimes it's a metal bucket, or it could be a basket. This time it's a basket. And the tradition of the Kashkul is to receive alms for a good cause, to collect energy for one who could be helped by it. So as we listen to sacred songs collected over the decades by Mikhail, following my father's directions, we're conscious that Mikhail is living at the abode in a little cabin on his own and really living on a shoestring in his retirement with only the barest means. And in advanced years. So anyone who might wish to make a contribution to the means of livelihood of Mikhail, you know, however, whatever it might be, however a gesture it is, but if you wish, if you feel inspired to give sadaqah, give some alms, then that will go to him. My father's legacy lives on through his voice, among other means, but those recordings of his voice are certainly a treasury. Thankfully, he was recorded so diligently, and those tapes have been preserved and now at the Pir Vilayat Center on the hill, the recordings are being preserved and digitalized. So for all of this, to God, to the most generous, a shukr lillah. All gratitude to all that has come down to us, the whole tradition of service and perseverance and upholding of what has come down, passing it on to further generations, to be part of this caravan moving through the ages. It's been a century since Hazrat Pir Murshid Inayat Khan brought the Sufi message to the West. And in the decades between, how this caravan has journeyed, moving through this visible world, but also beyond into the hereafter. And how many friends of the way continue to journey with us, but invisibly, the caravan continues. In fact, this is how Murshid described initiation. Finding that companionship of souls, that caravan of souls with which one will travel in mutual aid and good companionship through this world and into the beyond, into the hereafter, because it doesn't end in death. One of the tendencies of our time is a kind of insistent individualism, the notion that one should determine one's own life as a law unto oneself and not be beholden to anyone, not be answerable to anyone, and that this is the meaning of freedom. But actually, the etymology of the word freedom reveals kinship with the word friend. Freedom is not fulfilled in isolation. Yes, there are two poles that need to be navigated, to be balanced. One pole representing the uniqueness of one's own particular journey. There are as many paths to God as there are souls. So not merely to imitate and conform to patterns foisted upon you elsewhere, rather experience each moment directly through your own heart, but simultaneously, what is one's own? What is oneself? Is it not kindred to every other self? Are we not all interrelated and united in the journey and interdependent and mutually enhanced? Just think of the things in this room, the carpet on which we are seated. Which one of us could have harvested or raised the sheep and harvested the wool and dyed it and woven it and conceived the pattern? all of that was possible through a community of effort and vision. Or this microphone. How many years would it take to create this microphone from scratch, to invent it? But here it is, we don't need to. Also, the insights of our mind. We stand on the shoulders of giants. Our minds are the continuation of the thinking of the ages. And even our hearts are the furtherance of the emotion of the ages. And yet now, in us, it's customized, rendered unique. Each of us has an ancestry, a genealogy, which consists not only of our physical parents, but also our genic parents and our angelic parents. Did you ever wonder about your angelic parents? But equally, our thoughts owe their genesis to a long story of invention, exploration, cogitation, ecstasy. We're part of this tradition. So there are traditions within tradition. There's a great tradition of humanity, which is part of the great tradition of planet Earth, which is part of the tradition of the cosmos. And within the human tradition, there are the sacred traditions of the prophets of various lands and various times. All articulations of the universal tradition. And each winnowing out a vista, a horizon of perspective. And all of those perspectives overlapping reveal a panorama of the sacred. And this is the terrain through which we're moving. And our guides are the trailblazers, the pathbreakers, embodied in Hiero history, in the figures of the holy messengers, the prophets, prophetesses, saints and masters. Whose vocation of guidance and service exists most recognizably in human contours, but which can also be tracked in the inner world, where such beings are known as the Rijal al-Ghaib, the people of the unseen, who still exert a presence in the seen world, but only through the law of resonance, when our own minds are magnetized in the attunement of those beings, then a line of communication and inspiration opens up. And some work in still more rarefied spheres, more transcendent spheres in the angelic planes, among the cherubim and seraphim, the malaika and the mukarrabun. Each allotted a certain sphere of influence, and these many spheres of influence proliferating, overlapping, encompass the cosmos in a cascade of guidance, protection, conferral of benediction, without which this whole universe would crumble to dust. This is what we call the spiritual hierarchy of the world, representing, bespeaking, personifying the divine mandate, and therefore resounding, reverberating with the summons, the call, the reminder. That reminder roars through all of the revelations of the world. And when one's ear is tuned to hear it, it's unmistakable. It's the call home. The assurance that wheresoever you turn, there is God's face. And the admonition to bestir oneself, to rise up out of the torpor of negligence, distraction, apathy. Wake up. Come alive. Now, in this time-bound frame of consciousness that we inhabit, guidance comes through three tracks, from the past, from the present, and from the future. So what is the guidance from the past? There's a universal nostalgia for a lost golden age. In so many cultures, there is this romance, this myth of a better time, dimly remembered, but hallowed in memory, venerated. The halcyon days, after which came a degeneration, the loss of the old enlightenment. That historical conception reflects something intrinsic to our own psyche, the sense of having descended into the muddle in which we find ourselves from a higher, from a purer, from a simpler place, and a poignant sense of loss, lost innocence. Sometimes manifest in the idea of having taken a wrong turn on life's path at a certain point, and since then nothing has gone right. Or even the idea that incarnation itself came at such a cost that from the very moment one entered the world, one was already lost. These are intimations of something not lost, not unrecoverable, but still as intact, as pure, and as present as ever. Only one doesn't see it. It's occluded. Just as when the sun goes down at the end of the day, the sun doesn't disappear, it isn't destroyed. The sun is the sun. It's only the world has turned and the sun is invisible. It will be visible again. So that innate purity of the soul, that simpler time, that purer time, before the heaped up impressions that wrought havoc on the mind. It's not irrecoverable. Still, it's the same, still right here. Just another level of being. And sometimes to go forward, one must go back. One must get in touch with that simplicity, that purity, that prior condition, that before the incarnate mind, the jinnic mind, the jinnic life before this incarnation in the collective unconscious, in one's own itinerary through the human inner culture. But even prior to that, the angelic grove of love and intimacy and sacredness symbolized sometimes by doves, by swans, birds suggest this delicacy of body, freedom of movement in the sky, and still, even now, with these 2 feet on the ground, each of us is an angel. And the divine name that restores the experience, revives the memory, which is not a memory of the past, but a disclosure of the inner present, is Al-Mu'id, the restorer of what seemed lost. Yeah. second angle in which guidance descends in our tripartite time frame is in the newness of the present moment, the freshness of this instant, which isn't simply the reiteration of the past. Yes, the essence of the past survives, but also a new dispensation is brought forth. Kulli yomin huwa fishan. Every day a new splendor. The special prayer of the prophet Abraham, peace be upon him, was to say, O God, this is a new creation. To say that each morning. This is a new creation. Creation is not an event that occurred at a certain time long ago. Creation is perpetual. And the way Ainul Quzzat Hamadani explains this is that if you reflect on the light of the sun that fills the sky, at first it might seem like a single sheet. Daylight is just a static thing that is apparent all day long and then it's gone. But that's a misperception. Actually, sunlight streams down. It's flowing constantly. It waves. Or when you look at a river, it's not a thing. It's not this body of water. It's wave after wave after wave of water, new water, each moment. So sunlight, you know, we look at someone and we think we've seen that person. No, you've seen sunlight shining down, reflecting from the contours of that person, piercing the retina, traveling through the optic nerve, lighting up the brain, and that sunlight, that light is continuously streaming, so the photons are ever new. Everything is lit up, and then lit up, and then lit up, and lit up. But not only from without, also from within. Deep within the atoms of everything, there's a continuous dissolution and reemergence. Things only look continuous. Actually, everything's pulsing. But the pulsations are so rapid, one doesn't notice them. Actually, they're pulsations of different durations. So, from a certain perspective, the whole history of this universe is one pulse. There are insects that live only an hour. And they live as long a lifetime as we do, from their perspective. It's all relative. But everything is flashing, pulsing, appearing and disappearing. So this is a new day, which is liberating if one avails oneself of its liberation, because what it means is that the horizontal chain of causation is not the whole story. So you're not only your conditioning, unless you succumb to it, but if you avail yourself of the vertical causal descent from the source, moment by moment, there's a source of creativity that liberates you from the chains of the past. Everything is made anew to the degree to which we partake of what is given moment by moment. But as Sheikh Al-Akbar Muhyiddin Ibn Al-Arabi explains, the heart tends to calcify, to fossilize in a certain shape, and the heart is the vessel of tajalliyat, the vessel of the epiphanies, the revelations of the Divine Spirit. And what is received is in accord with the shape of the vessel. So when the heart is rigid, that which it's been preconfigured to receive, it will keep receiving that. But when the heart becomes malleable, then, as Ibn Arabi says, my heart is capable of any form. And tajalliyat are never repeated. Every tajalli, every descent of new creation, every flashing forth of spirit is new. Like snowflakes, each one is unique. But imagine a snowflake so vast, multidimensional, that it just emanates out and pervades and unfurls through the whole creation, and again, this kind of snow, this precipitation from the source moving through everything. To be open to that, to be attentive to it, to receive the new creation day by day. That is to be an Ibn al-Waqt, to be a Bint al-Waqt, to be a child of the moment. So, the divine name Al-Muhyi Revivifier reveals the manner in which we're not born once, we're reborn, we're revivified, tajalli after tajalli. It just takes this turning of our own inner face toward the divine face for the encounter. Ya Muhyi, 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 Ya Mohi. 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 We come to the third vector, which is perhaps still more challenging to our ordinary way of thinking. So think back on yourself 30 years ago. Who you were then, what you were doing, what your concerns were, your path through the world. Probably looked rather different. So this you, where was this you now in 2019? Where were you then? Now that we're here, we know this is something. At that time, we had some vague picture of the future, but vague, but now we know this place, this destination we've reached, or at least point of transit. And there's a sense, yes, there's one arrangement of time in which all is linear, but there's another arrangement of time that's synchronous, where all stages of life are present to each other simultaneously. They're just cross sections of one thing. So in that sense, this self, yourself now, was already there 30 years ago, What would yourself now say to your earlier self? What advice would you give? It's paradoxical because if you say, well, avoid such and such a thing because you realize it had unfortunate results, but without having gone through that, you wouldn't be in the position to give that advice now. So one really couldn't say anything directive, but somehow one's presence superimposed, the presence of oneself now superimposed on the presence of oneself 30 years ago, would exert a certain magnetic attraction. Greeks use the word telos. Something pulling from the front rather than pushing from the back. And in fact, there is a pull of the future, drawing not only our personal life, but exerting its influence on the whole flux of the universe. We sense it in our probings, in our questions, in our flights of imagination. What might be? The answer is informed, yes, by the experience of the past, but not determined entirely by the past. What might yet be? And it's a horizon that recedes as you advance. With each footstep, it becomes more distant, but meanwhile, new terrain, terra incognita, opens up with each forward step. So this way, guidance reaches us through the futuristic trajectory, the omega, which is under the aegis of the divine name Al-Muqaddam. Ya Muqaddam, muqaddam. Ya 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 Ya muqaddam. It's time for some fresh air.